January 19th, 2012. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Is that Sanford and Son? I think it is.
Yep.
Yeah, we need to.
Hey, it's about time for
unexpectedly change the podcast.
It's about time for a new song. Sanford and Son. Well, hi everyone. It's Lullabot Podcast number 100. It's
ooh, round numbers.
100th podcast. I know, we get all excited.
And you can make glasses out of the two zeros.
Eyeglasses. Yeah. Yeah. That's exciting. We had it's 2012 now, and every year I watch, you know, the New Year's Rockin' Eve or whatever it is, you know, from Times Square. And I really thought in 2009 it would be the end of the glasses, and then 2010 they managed to make the O's into glasses again, and now we're in 2012 and they're still making glasses. I don't know how they do it. But anyways, I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with
Matt Wesky
and
Nate Aug.
And also,
Jeff Eaton.
And last but certainly not least,
Addison Berry.
It's the Lullabot team, or some part of the Lullabot team these days, here to do Podcast 100. We were trying to figure out, we wanted something special for Podcast 100, and so we kept putting it off and putting it off. Oh, think of something magical. And finally, we decided to just, you know, do it. And I think we're going to do sort of a Lullabot retrospective. On January 1st, we had the 6th anniversary of the company. We're now 6 years old and heading into our 7th year. And we thought it'd be at least nice for us to sort of take a look back and sort of look at Lullabot and Drupal and sort of the evolution of things over the years. First, as per usual, we have a few little announcements and news type things. First of all, we want to continue to promote our Drupal video training website called Drupalize Me, which you can find at drupalize.me, drupalize.me. I think I've said that over and over enough. It's got a bazillion videos. Is that right, Addie?
I believe it's around a bazillion. We're you know, once you get over a certain number, you just start rounding
it's
off.
It's a lot. We have, 468 videos currently up there, 210 hours of Drupal training, all organized, and you can basically find, whatever you're looking for with
and more coming.
And more
coming. Yeah, we have lots of cool stuff in the pipeline that's going to be showing up in February. I'm really excited about it.
And we've got apps. Now we've got a Roku app for your Roku box. You hook up your TV, $50 costs for a Roku box. Plug it with an HDMI cable in the back of your TV, and you can watch all these videos on your television. We've got iPad and iPhone apps and Android apps. And we're continuing to work on more of that kind of stuff. We think it's a really great way to learn Drupal, get up to speed, really wide variety of topics, everything from really like basic site building stuff through, module building and theming all the way up to high performance, database tuning and SEO and, things like that. You can become a Drupal super genius with Drupalize Me. There you go. There's the pitch.
And I have to admit, one of the things that I personally really like about it is the videos have actually been broken up in a fairly granular fashion. So it's now possible to go in and get information about specific kinds of tasks you want to do with certain Drupal modules and stuff like that. It's a little weird, though, because sometimes I'll find a video that I actually recorded.
it's, that you want to watch? Sort of,
yeah, it's sort of like Memento. It's like there's past me, and I've left important notes for myself on how to do argument-driven views. But it works.
Tattooed backwards on yourself, yes, so you can read them in the mirror. Yeah. Yes.
We need to have a little turn the video backwards feature.
Oh, you know, I need a little button to click. Sand. Thanks, Pastor.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's Drupalize Me. People are really enjoying it, and we're enjoying doing it. It's a great way to get Drupal training. We're also doing some Drupal training at DrupalCon. DrupalCon is in March. What are the exact dates?
It's like the something to the something to the, it's like the 19th to the 20 something.
Denver, yeah. Click.
This is precisely calendars what I rely are pretty on iCal.
Cool. Okay, yes. DrupalCon Denver is happening in Denver, Colorado, March 19th through the 23rd. And people can still register for that. Has it sold out yet? These things tend to sell out. Oh, look, there's Matt and Jeff Eaton right there on the homepage. Featured speakers. Guys, how fancy.
That means we've been exported to code.
Drupal nerd jokes. I love them. Anyways, Addie, do you want to mention what the training is that we're doing?
Right. We've got there's an Under the Hood, which is a development class using basically setting up something simple with views and then panels and then actually getting into the code underneath how that stuff works. And we're going to have a couple of bots up there, including Eaton. But we're also going to have Earl Miles joining us. So the guy who actually created all of this stuff, and we'll have access to his brain for the entire day. On sort of what's going on underneath views and panels. And then Nate is going to be on the performance and scalability dream team with Mark Sonnenbaum from Acquia and David Strauss from Pantheon. So that's going to, I think that's going to be an awesome session. I'll have to see which one I actually go to, since I should probably go to the one I helped work with. But anyway.
but you already know
those
that.
Those trainings are actually full day things, not just.
Yep. Those are the day before.
Full
is that
day
right?
workshops.
Yep.
Yeah. And you can actually, even if you're not attending the conference, you can purchase the training. Like you can go to the training and purchase it separately from a DrupalCon ticket as well.
Cool. And then the Lullabot. Various people from the Lullabot team will be speaking at various sessions at DrupalCon, and we don't have a complete list yet, but
we will be thick on the ground.
Yeah, we'll post that on we usually post that up on lullabot.com, and if you're not on the Lullabot mailing list, go to lullabot.com and get on the mailing list. There's a little picture of a letter. You know, like a postal letter. Remember those? Get on our mailing list, and we will let you know what's happening. Cool. Any news from the world of Drupal?
Oh, is there? No, this week actually was a pretty. It was a big event for actually I think last week is when it first landed, but the Drupal 8 the configuration management initiative that's being led by Greg Dunlap Hayrocker just posted their first really major patch. They've done a couple of other small patches that actually got in Drupal 8, things like the basis for the UUID system that allows every piece of content to have a really unique universal ID, which is sort of one of the building blocks for cross-site content deployment. It doesn't solve the whole problem of like really staging content, but it's one of the important building blocks to have that in core. And now they've just dropped in the first version of the big config management patch that changes a lot of the under the hood stuff that Drupal uses to store configuration information and stuff like that, so that it's much easier to deploy and move from like a developer's computer to a testing server to the live server and move out to other servers. It's not the kind of, crazy, sexy stuff that, you necessarily see in feature demos, but it's a really huge enabling feature for just workflow and deployment issues that are really thorny right now. So that, in my mind, that's probably some of the biggest needs that's been going on in, like, the Drupal core world.
What are the, like, big, broad overview kind of changes that we're going to see in Drupal 8? Like, how will Drupal 8 sort of differ from Drupal 7 in like, what are the basic ways? Is there a way to sum that up?
Some of the major initiatives in Drupal 8, the ones that are really, really visible, there's a lot of work that's going on with language and localization to really smooth out some of the rough edges that are there. There's the config management initiative that I mentioned that Greg Dunlap is working on. There's also a mobile initiative that's being worked on by John Albin and a bunch of other people that are sort of in the design and theming circles. It's not just theming, but it's really about like making Drupal a lot more ready for mobile, you know, for mobile platforms and stuff like that. So that's interesting. That's going on sort of in one area. And then there's also the what's referred to as the WSCI initiative, WSCCI, the Web Services and Context Management. It's basically sort of an umbrella for a relatively significant rewrite of some of Drupal's internals that's being headed up by Larry Krell Garfield of Palantir. And he's putting a lot of work into that, and there's been a relatively large pool of people that have been working on that. And it's been a bumpy road just because, you know, it has the potential to really change a lot of Drupal's innards. But the sort of the carrot at the end of the stick with that kind of rewrite is the ability to like make Drupal much lighter to bootstrap. So, you know, things like you could, you know, Drupal could theoretically run faster and take a lot less memory and be more flexible and have at least some of the underlying concepts of tools like the context module and the panels module already baked into core, so it wouldn't necessarily have to be something that gets bolted on after the fact. It's definitely deep in the heated debates and, you know, prototype code phase. It's not like, you know, you can download Drupal 8 and test it out yet. But I think it's definitely one of the important things that's going on.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more module consolidation too, where it's, you know, more and more of the most common problems being moved into core. Although there's a lot of sort of discussion back and forth, as there always has been, about, you know, should we really be making core larger all the time. But I don't know. I think overall, I mean, Drupal 7, we had a long and bumpy road to get there too, and it seemed like, you know, at times everything was going to melt down and nobody was ever going to love it because of its complexity or things like its database storage mechanism, which I'm sort of anti about, but overall now, I mean, like, here we are, you know, a year later, Drupal 7's been out for over a year now, and adoption rate has just been phenomenal, and the actual architecture, people love, the user interface is leaps and bounds above what we had before. So I don't know, it's easy to get all bogged down in the details of things, especially, you know, here we are again with Drupal 8.
So are we on a 2-year release cycle? Should we be seeing Drupal 8 be like less than a year now, right? Like probably December.
You're such a funny man.
If you can just add the sound of crickets in a post.
And that's all, folks.
It's like scary in so many ways. Like, oh God, how would we get there? One. And then the other is, oh, we're still catching up with Drupal 7.
I mean, this is something that we saw in Drupal 6 too. Like, you know, this is like a big debate after Drupal 7 shipped, you know, whether or not much shorter release cycles would be better, or, you know, long release cycles like we saw with Drupal 7. And I think it's interesting looking at the adoption curve that Drupal saw. It's not like the long, you know, the long 3-year period of Drupal 6 being the official release for Drupal. It's not like Drupal's adoption suffered during that time. In fact, I mean, my take on it is that people actually, it thrived with the sort of stability of Drupal core being there for that long. And I think it's a matter of trying to balance the challenge of like tons and tons of small ongoing upgrades and migrations versus every several years, you know, swallowing a big migration project. I don't think there's necessarily a right answer for it, but, you know, It's definitely a complicated question. And I think
it happens. I guess it sort of happens when it happens, and it's kind of finding its own sort of balance at this point. But we're not going to see Drupal 8 till the end of next year, at least. Is that your feeling?
I'll have to dig up the URL, but there's actually a website where somebody's doing, basically setting up a betting pool, and good money's on 2013.
Right on. Cool. All right. Well, let's see. Podcast 100. Wow. I mean, so first of all, some people listening may be a little confused because one of the things that's happened in the evolution of Lullabot is we sort of had a podcast fork happen at Lullabot, and we started doing a podcast called Drupal Voices, which is shorter form interviews that Kent Bai has been doing usually at DrupalCon events. And Kent, as prolific as he is, has recorded 218 of those. So we could also see this, I suppose, as podcast number 318, which isn't quite as rounded number as 100. But this is the Lullabot Drupal podcast, which we've been doing since 2006, when we started the company. And it was just Matt and me back then, and I listened back to them, and they're a little bit embarrassing.
we were just wee lads on the internet. We were,
you know, in 2018, we're going to listen to this podcast and say
this one, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's also like if I look at the code that I wrote back then too, it's like, ooh, really?
Yeah. It's a really interesting evolution. So we started Lullabot on January 1st, 2006. It was in December that Matt and I decided that we were going to start a company, and we spent a lot of back and forth trying to decide the name of the company. I kept coming up with all these ideas, and I would send Matt this like little presentation of the name, and Lullabot, you know, it was good. We had it came with the little robot and the everything. Lullaby robot was good, so we decided to go with that. We figured it sounded a little weird at first, but we would get used to it. Yeah. It still sounds a little bit weird, but I have gotten used to it. and we started. Goodness, I mean, I think it was really the goal to start a more of a consulting company than a development company, and we'd worked on a couple of Drupal development projects together, and we're really feeling like there weren't enough developers in Drupal, and we wanted to help people to do development rather than to do the development for them. And so we started as a consulting company, and honestly, we started doing some development right off the bat because we weren't getting a whole lot of calls for consulting. I mean, we were just sort of taking what came along.
Well, I mean, that was also an era in Drupal when like the Drupal consulting banner was relatively new. I mean, at the time, you could build a site with Drupal. Someone would hire you to build a site, and you would happen to use Drupal instead of Joomla or WordPress or something like that.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that Drupal at the time was really a hobbyist's platform. It was not proven. No one had built like big, significant sites with it. I mean, there were some sites that were getting built with it. Now Public was one. Jeremy Andrews, Kernel Trap, was another, but they were kind of, not like a general purpose, like not like a household name kind of websites.
Yeah, and like The Onion went on Drupal too, but like still a lot of that was it was a very small pool of sites that
and when you went out on sales pitches, that was what you'd mention. It just felt like you weren't mentioning much, you know.
Well, and they would just look at you like, what?
Yeah,
The Onion
The Onion and kernel trap and now public, you know, like it didn't quite have that sort of like toppling power that you do with the sites that have been launched on Drupal.
These days. Barack Obama, he uses it.
Yeah, exactly. The White House is using it. Kind of ends the conversation, you know. And so I don't know. It was interesting, and we started doing a podcast right off. Which in itself was a bit of a leap of faith. I mean, here we were starting a consulting company where basically we were asking people to pay us for our expertise, to share with them our knowledge and how things are working. And then we had this idea, well, why don't we do a podcast where we just get on every week and talk to people about what we learned that week and share our knowledge and expertise with them. It was a bit of a, like, at first, there was a moment where it was like, wait, is that smart? But then it just felt like the right thing to do. It felt like a good way to kind of give back to the community, the people that had built Drupal, and to start to build more community around Drupal. And so I think if I go back to the, like, Lullabot podcast one, I think it was like January 14th or something. I mean, it was literally within like a couple of weeks of starting the company, we started doing a podcast.
It was also a way to bubble up some of the, I mean, all of the activity that was happening within Drupal. I mean, Drupal.org has changed, believe it or not, in the 6 years, 7 years since Lullabot started. And there wasn't a good way to sort of get an overview, to get a grasp of what was going on in the community. A lot of it was either you watched CVS commits or you didn't really know what was going on. So we used that to say not only what sites, we used the podcast to say what sites were being built, but also as a way to almost document or capture a lot of the innovation that was happening in the community. We could talk about the code that was being done. We could bring people onto the podcast and talk about what they're doing or the sites that they launched. And it really helped bubble up that information and get it out there to a larger audience and just carry a lot of that momentum out to the forefront.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the combination of the podcast and the sites that we'd built before Lullabot brought in some interesting work for us, really, that first year. I think it was probably in March. So in February, if I remember correctly, was what was it called? The Drupal? No, it wasn't Drupal. It was the Open Source CMS Summit. Was it even called that? And it was in Vancouver, and we went up and had Lullabot T-shirts that we gave out to people up there.
I remember being jealous of all the people who were able to go.
Yeah, well, there were only like 80 people there, and like 10 of them were not from Drupal. Maybe there were 92, but yeah, some percentage of them were from like Joomla, and Matt Mullenweg from WordPress was there. He was, I think, the only WordPress person. He felt, I think, a little bit duped. Like, why am I here? There were I think, like, not speakers, but people who were attending who were interested in WordPress. WordPress is very popular, continues to be. But yeah, and so we handed out some T-shirts, and work started coming in, and then we had a couple people. Well, Ted Serbinski in particular came up to us shortly after that and said, "Hey, man, I really like your T-shirt. Are you guys hiring?" And Matt and I looked at each other. Hiring? Oh, we should kind of figure out like how to be the kind of a company that can hire people. And we quickly figured that out, which was really handy because right around that same time, we got an email from MTV UK, and they were interested in rebuilding their website on Drupal. And we, goodness, I mean, we couldn't have been more excited. We just,
I believe the next weekend we were in London.
Yeah, we emailed them back, and then we're on the phone within a couple hours, like, what do you need? Can we can come to London, you know? And that weekend we flew to London and started helping MTV rebuild their site in Drupal, which was again, arguably, and I'm going out on a limb here, and people are welcome to call me out on this, but, you know, one of the first, you know, household name kind of Drupal websites that people had heard of. And that was great for them, great for Drupal, and great for us. We also got a call from Sony Music, and Doug Gottlieb over there had been listening to our podcast and thought we were funny. He liked our sense of humor, so he gave us a call about working on that. And so by the end of our first year, we were pretty heavily working with MTV and Sony Music, and that was a really exciting beginning to the company.
And that's also how most of the early Lullabots actually gained the ability to recognize Chris Daughtry songs by the first three notes.
You have the summer.
Every time you loaded the page, it would.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! We were testing the audio player.
I don't. I.
That's the thing. We couldn't turn the player off at all because, like, we were actually testing to make sure the damn thing worked, and it did. It worked really well.
Every time we reloaded.
So I'm trying to think. So Nate, you're sort of the most senior Lullabot these days. When did you come in to the company?
Oh, geez. Well, it was on the MTV UK project right at the tail end. A fun story about that. It sort of relates to the differences in our hiring practices these days. When I first was hired by Lullabot, I'd only talked on the phone with Matt and Jeff, mostly Matt, for I don't know, a couple phone calls, like a half dozen or so. And then I got hired, and we never even met before up until the point where I flew out to San Francisco and met Jeff and Liza for the first time, and they were so shocked that I was white, first of all, because everyone in the company had been imagining me as an Asian because of my last name,
Korean,
which isn't even Asian at all. It's like it's Austrian or something like that.
But if you put an N in there, it's Huang.
But if you, but if you just, you know, intentionally,
and to be fair, you had a very ambiguous avatar.
It looks like it could be Huang or something like that. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, good times. Now we, being a virtual company, that doesn't, it's a danger of being a virtual company, but we take more adequate precautions these days.
to not misidentify people like that. Well,
It wouldn't have affected things one way or the other, Nate. Just to be clear. Eaton, I think we hired you at least to start freelance without even ever having spoken to you on the phone. I think it was purely through IRC, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. No, I specifically remember there was a voting module that they needed to do. Like, there was this, you know, sort of stuff you like and topics you think are awesome and topics you never want to see and stuff like that that needed to be done on the MTV UK site. And that was right in the area, right around the time that I was first really getting a good head of steam behind the voting API project. And I was sort of doing my hard sell behind, you know, to convince the different people who were doing all of their different, you know, miscellaneous voting related modules in the Drupal world to start using voting API as their back end. And I think that somebody inside of Lullabot said, hey, that sounds like, you know, it could be useful for that. So, at night, my day job at that time was I was doing like enterprise.net development for the grocery industry, and I was trying to convince my company that Drupal was a really good tool for doing our internal knowledge base, because at that time it was like, you know, a giant folder full of Microsoft Word files or something like that. So I was doing a lot of tinkering around with Drupal, and then, you know, for a personal site and stuff like that. But that was like one of those initial, I could maybe do this. So in the evenings I was doing that, and I'd done a couple other freelance jobs at the time. And I don't mean to sound crass, but like one of the things that really, really startled and impressed me was, you know, you guys like paid your bills on time and invoices. It was like, wow, man. You know, you were talking about like, oh, we got to be a real company, but like, man, from the perspective of a freelancer coming in, it was like, sweet, these guys have their act together.
It was funny conversation. Like, it's like, oh yeah, we should hire that voting guy. Hopefully he'll have a sense of humor.
Sadly, no.
Oh, I worked out fine there.
Yeah.
And then Addie, you
was a weird hire.
You attended our first workshops, right?
Yeah, in DC. Yeah,
in DC, the first workshop, the first Lullabot workshops that first year were in DC, and we were fumbling our way through. You know, at the time it felt like, oh yeah, this is great, but now that we're six years later in training, we have, shall we say, better systems in place these days.
Yeah, but you guys, that's the thing, you guys had met me many times in person, because then we hung out at when it was the Sunnyvale open source CMS, which was really DrupalCon, because there were like five people from other content management systems there. So yeah, we spent like a bunch of time hanging out together. And then I attended another workshop in Providence. I think it was a theming workshop. And at the end of the week of being a student in the workshop, you guys asked to hire me. And I still remember, because we were sitting in the van. You asked, like, you guys were giving me a ride to the dinner after in the van, and you brought it up, and I just laughed because I totally thought you were joking. I was like, I'm a student. What are you, dumb?
Yes, we are. That's worked out great too. I feel like I should pause here a moment, because I'm sure that there are people listening to this that's going like, wait, what? I don't quite understand this.
It's so, like a clip episode.
So Lullabot is a virtual company, we should give a little bit of a definition of what that is and sort of how it works. So, it really starts way back at the beginning when Matt and I met over online, right? I was having trouble with a Drupal site that I was building, and Matt was a Drupal expert with like a whole lot of Drupal modules. I think the like sort of biggest one at the time was Matt had done the original implementation of the e-commerce framework for Drupal back in 2005, which has basically no relation with what's now Drupal Commerce, sort of the third or arguably fourth iteration of e-commerce in Drupal. and Matt had written a whole bunch of the core stuff. You wrote like the path aliasing and stuff like that. And I needed a Drupal expert because I was in way over my head. And I started asking questions on Drupal.org, and the e-commerce guy responded to some of my questions, and like, he knew what was going on, and I sent him an email contact form. I said, listen, can I just like hire you to like help me build this project? Cause I'm in like way over my head, and I've done the math, and like, if I pay you to help me, it's going to cost me less than me trying to do this on my own. And so we got on the phone together, but like, we'd never met in person. Matt lived in Iowa, at the time. And I lived in, Providence, I think, at the time, maybe, yeah. And it was great, and it seemed like a great way. We got a lot of work done. We worked with that client. We then worked with another client, and built a couple of projects this way. And it seemed like, wow, this is great. Let's just keep doing this. And how can we sort of expand this out? And so when we started Lullabot, we said, we don't need a central office, you know. Our work lives on the internet, and so will we. And so we just kind of kept on that way, hiring people sort of through the Drupal community and based on their skill sets and friendliness to some extent, rather than, like, you know, saying, okay, we're a Providence company, and we're hiring people in Providence to come into work each day. Over time, goodness, we've developed a huge, like, network of different communications methods for running the company. We've got a conference bridge now with, I think, 10 different telephone numbers. We got, like, we can run 10 different conference calls at once. We've got an IRC channel, which acts as a chat room for the company, and we've got intranet, Drupal-based, you know, intranet sort of internal blog kind of website.
Which we've rewritten three times.
Yeah. And we use Yammer a lot, which is, for people that aren't familiar with Yammer, it's microblogging, but sort of as Twitter is to blogging, Yammer is to intranets. So sort of private microblogging. So just within the company. And that's actually been a really good tool for us. And there's others too. I mean, we do a lot of video conferencing and screen sharing and all kinds of stuff. And it's really worked out really well. Surprisingly well. I keep thinking that we should sort of write and talk more about this whole virtual company thing, because it's been a really interesting evolution, and to some extent a coming out, because at first, you know, you don't want to kind of admit that you don't have a central office.
It's like saying you met your significant other online. It's like, you know, there was a stigma to it for a long time.
Yeah, it feels like it's not as legitimate. You know, well, when I get angry at you, where am I going to come to bang on your door?
Yeah.
But I think our work speaks for itself, and you know, we've worked on a lot of really big projects over the past 6 years, and have had really good success. And it's also really helped us to, I think, hire the best talent, regardless of where they live. And that's an interesting thing. That being said, It's hard to, you know, we've sort of defaulted to basically a U.S. Eastern work day in terms of scheduling phone calls and meetings and stuff like that, which makes it a little bit difficult to work with, like, have employees in Australia or something like that, because it's so kind of flipped around from the U.S. work day.
The one Lullabot who's had it hardest, I think, was probably Nate, who at one point in Lullabot history had a client in Italy, a client in the UK, and a client in Hong Kong, and a client in Australia that he sometimes had to schedule calls with.
I forgot about that.
I don't think that's actually possible with physics.
You're a good sport about it, Nate.
It's all part of the mystique.
The mystique that is Nathan.
Sorry,
Haug.
I have a call at 6 a.m.
I don't know. How is it possible?
I have a call at everything o'clock.
Well, it's also been just really interesting. There's a funny little adjustment, even working with some of our clients sometimes. Most people in daily life don't add the time zone when they say a time for things. And for Lullabot, you have to add a time zone or we'll have no idea. You know, hey, let's have that call at noon. Like, noon where? Because we're spread out all over. You know, we need to say noon Eastern time.
I really hate is when daylight savings changes, because North America changes differently, a week differently now than, like, say, we do here in Europe.
So when we met Addie, she was living in the U.S., and now Addie lives in Copenhagen, which, for those of you in the U.S., is in Denmark.
And Denmark is not the Netherlands, and Amsterdam is not involved. I'm just going to put it out there right now.
I am so confused.
Okay. And anyway, so yeah, so it's been interesting as well. Like, we've had a lot of Lullabot people who've moved around. Actually, most of the people on this podcast have moved around. Matt, you've moved around quite a bit.
Yeah, from Iowa to Oregon to Utah to Rhode Island.
Yeah, and now you live near me, which makes it a little bit easier when there are fires that need to put out. We can get together and go in the same room. We haven't said, this podcast is made up of sort of the five longest standing Lullabot people. But there are currently 30 people at Lullabot. So we've grown quite a bit. And we're still growing. We're still hiring. Lullabot.com/jobs. For information about the positions available at Lullabot at this time,
get on our mailing list. If you'd like to join these fun, witty, intelligent people that you're listening to now, please go to lullabot.com/jobs.
Well, this is the other thing is that as you're growing and sort of continuing on, I find myself sort of, you know, hawking our hiring more. You know, when we first started out, it's like, oh, you guys hiring? It's like, no. We're never hiring. We're always
just find people we like.
Yeah, we always keep an ear to the ground, but we're never officially hiring. And these days, it's like, no, we're hiring. And what else?
And, well, it's also been interesting as we've started doing this because, in a lot of ways, like some of the challenges we faced as Lullabot, I think are a mirror of the way that the Drupal community has faced challenges growing. Like, you know, when it first, you know, when Lullabot was like, you know, six people and we would hire, you know, person number seven, you know, acclimating someone to the company culture and getting them on board with all the information we had was a matter of like adding their account to our intranet site and, you know, inviting them into the IRC channel and making sure they had an email address. But now as we've got like 30 people and, you know, how many simultaneous projects going on? I think we've got at least like six or seven projects rolling right now.
At least probably 14.
Well, that's silly me. And it's not just a matter of like coordinating, you know, just the concrete, oh, person A needs information, person B needs information. But even just like keeping us up to date on what everyone is doing so that like knowledge sharing can occur. Because like originally we had two check-in calls each week and half of the check-in call that we did each week was like, you know, everybody, you know, just, you know, shooting the breeze and talking about tech stuff. And maybe, you know, 45 minutes of our, you know, weekly check-in call was somebody talking about like this crazy new form API thing that was going in or something like that. And a lot of, you know, just basic information dissemination about what we were learning happened there. And as we've gotten larger, we've, you know, that just doesn't happen as organically. You know, you just, if we actually did that, you know, our morning check-in call on Monday would be 6 hours long. And we've had to be a lot more conscious and deliberate about things like knowledge sharing and capturing, like, what are Lullabot's internal practices, what are our, you know, core values, and, you know, figuring out how to bring people into that and be able to explain those things and articulate them a lot more clearly than we had to previously. It's been really interesting.
Yeah, it has been. And Jeff and I, you know, we always say, okay, we're at six people. There's no way we can make this work at 10 people. And then we get to 10 people and say, oh my God, there's no way we can keep making this virtual company thing work at 20 people. And you know what? It keeps working. Imagine you're in a meeting, in a physical meeting, and there's always people outside. There's always people that can't make it to the meeting that you need to communicate to. And that's kind of like a virtual company, is your communication style changes from just you having a conversation with a person across the table to you having to communicate to a group of people. And what that does is, you know, I'm concerned that if we became a physical company, that I wouldn't have nearly the communication and touch points with the team as I do now. That the communication that we practice is proactive. You send an email, you send it to multiple people. We always have the mantra of CC liberally, you know, loop people in. You know, that we use Yammer to communicate, that we have to send emails and written reports, but it really, really keeps us tapped in to what each person is working on. I'm sure each of us on this call could rattle off the projects that each Lullabot is working on because of our communication style. And I really attribute that to being virtual and being more assertive in our communication. And I like it. Keeps me tapped in.
Yeah, I mean, we have a all hands team call on Monday and Friday. I'm hesitant to say morning because it's not morning for it's in the afternoon for Addie, and you know,
see, there's that Amerocentric bias. Right,
yeah, there. Yeah, and and it used to be like Jeff Eaton was saying you know, we just kid on and kind of shoot the breeze, you know, what's going on, you know, and now that we've got 30 people, in order to fit it into an hour, we need to make sure that each person talks for less than 2 minutes. And so it's a little bit more businesslike and people kind of write down what's going on with them, but it's not necessarily, you know, it's sort of what's on your mind. What are you working on? And, you know, oh, and we got a new dog, you know, so it's a really neat thing to hear. Everyone at Lullabot hears everyone else's voice at Lullabot twice a week. You know, people traveling and sometimes aren't able to make it. Yeah, minimum. And it's an interesting thing. I don't know. I mean, it's been interesting to sort of compare and contrast because there's sort of a trend these days to set up big kind of loft offices, and you see these in like San Francisco. It's sort of the classic office space in San Francisco where you have desks and you oftentimes have, you know, six people sitting around the same desk. I mean, this could be basically it's, you know, sort of a private coffee shop kind of a work environment. And, you know, it's developers. And so they got headphones on and they're listening to music and they're working. But what it means is that it's really difficult to have conversations in that office. It's difficult for people to talk to each other because either you're talking over people who are quietly working or, you know, it's private stuff that you don't want other people to hear or whatever. And so what ends up happening in a lot of those offices is that email, instant messaging, kind of become sort of the de facto communication standard. You know, I mean, I certainly have had several jobs over time where, you know, I was instant messaging with the person across the hall from me. And the reason was because you know, it was a private conversation or, you know, something that, you know, it didn't want to be shared in one way or another. At Lullabot, it's really easy for us to kind of, you know, certainly, you know, instant messaging the same way as everybody else, but email and phone calling. And I can certainly sort of, you know, pace back and forth in my home office, yelling on the phone for hours at a time. And you know, I don't bother anybody else at the company other than the people I'm talking to on the other end of the phone.
I think it's really interesting too, because like as the kind of work that Lullabot does has evolved, you know, that kind of, you know, the traditional, like, you know, Silicon Valley, you know, loft startup environment, it isn't, it's a really nice like war room environment for things like, you know, you've got, you know, a room full of 30 devs and they're in crunch time and you need to, you know, get the next version of a piece of software out or something like that. But a lot of the work that we do doesn't necessarily fit that model. It's, you know, like, you know, a small group of people researching something for a client, or, you know, three people in a little group working on, you know, working on a plan for the architecture for a new site or something like that. In a lot of ways, that sort of, you know, that sort of intensely physical open space where everybody's kind of in their in each other's faces to some extent can be really difficult. The New York Times actually just published an article called "The Rise of the New Groupthink" about that very concept of like how a lot of the, you know, introverts that tend to thrive in, you know, technical environments can actually be really stressed out by those sort of everybody gets their own giant room and we put 30 of you in here, you know, that kind of vibe can actually be really, really difficult. I think it's interesting. But like one of the things that Matt also mentioned was, you know, how we're forced to stay in contact, and like how being virtual like requires us to be really intentional about that. Well, I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways, either 100%, you know, physical with everybody there on site, or 100% virtual. Both of those are a lot easier. it's really rough. You know, I've been like an offsite person for companies that were physical, and it's so easy for the people who aren't there physically to be out of the loop. And I think it really is true that, you know, if everybody has to deal with that fact, everyone knows that they have to explicitly keep people in the loop and be explicit about their communication.
Yeah, the thing I say is that a physical company with a few virtual employees is a physical company with a few alienated employees. It's just,
yeah. I even talk to people, you know, because a lot of people are curious about like how I live in Denmark and work for a U.S. company, and it's, you know, just clipping about my life, and they you know, and they work in offices, and here in Denmark, you know, being on location in an office is really just understood to be the way things are. The whole idea of telecommuting is definitely not nearly as popular here. But a lot of them wish that their physical offices had the level of communication that we do. Like, you know, because we are so purposeful about it and we're so conscientious about it because it's what we have to do. And even working in the same physical building, people get out of the loop unless they're sitting in the cube right next to you. And so it's interesting because I think that it's just a generally good style of working, period, no matter where you're located or how your situation is, just because of the amount of information that happens now, and the kinds of things that we're dealing with. Like, there's just too much information to just assume that word of mouth through the office cubes is going to get it done.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I mean, the team calls, we have 2 hours of team call meetings a week, right? 2 hours of our entire week is just the team call, hearing what everybody else at the company is working on. But you know what? I mean, a lot of people are, I mean, I know oftentimes I'll, you know, I'm muting and I'm like washing dishes or cleaning up or, you know, doing other things that there's, I mean, I could never be at a company in a meeting at a company and be washing the dishes or, you know, or doing something else. I mean, it would be incredibly rude. You know,
I don't know. That sounds like a challenge.
but you can kind of multitask, and especially for just sort of listening in on a phone call like that, you know, I think it's good. We've come to, you know, part of the culture has been sort of acknowledging that people sometimes drift a little bit from the calls. You know, we'll say, Nate, what do you think? And, oh, I checking email there for a moment. There's been some funny things over time where it's like, oh, just got out of the shower and had you all on speakerphone, but yeah, what? Okay, go ahead. yeah.
Well, I think one of the other things that we don't necessarily talk about a lot publicly, I mean, not because it's secret, but just because it's internal, as we grew and the, like, our weekly check-in call stopped being a time to shoot the breeze about what's going on with Drupal and technology, we ended up starting what we call the TTTTTTTTTT. It's the Tuesday Tech Talk at 10 Texas time. Usually we just hold down the T key.
It happens on the team line.
The
team Tech Talk at Tuesday Tech Test.
But yeah, I mean, it's just sort of an internal opportunity for us to, you know, carve out an hour in a week and say, you know, like, I think this week, you know, somebody demonstrated, you know, internally how we're using Puppet, the Puppet utility to automate, you know, our lullabot.com servers and stuff like that. And other times it's been walkthroughs of Drupal modules that, you know, we're working on a particular client project, or, you know, it's just really interesting because it's an opportunity to do some of that, you know, knowledge sharing in a more explicit way that, as we've grown, we've had to be more conscious about carving out time for those things.
One thing I will say is that as a virtual company, one of the shadows is that it can be lonely at times. And we've had to kind of figure out how to take care of that problem so people do feel heard, and, you know, contributing to the team. And tools like Yammer certainly go a ways to help with that. But we've come up with some mantras along the way, like use a buddy. when people come into the company, we give them a buddy to work with, but also a Lola buddy. That's right. And as we do work, we usually try to work in pairs. But then, even when we travel, we try to travel, you know, as a group of people or as two people, to also have the social face-to-face interactions as well. So, you know, those ways we've tried to circumvent that. And I think it's helped quite a bit for everybody to stay connected along with those group team calls. But that's one thing. Certainly, I think as a physical company and a virtual company, that alienation point that you speak to about, you know, somebody tells a joke around the water cooler, but the only people that heard it were the ones that were at the physical company, and the virtual folks, you know, can't really get in on the joke. It's those sorts of things that we really try to be cognizant about.
I think it's really important. Also, we've started to recognize, I mean, the exclusive virtual company thing doesn't work, particularly in the kind of, you know, client-oriented consulting kind of stuff. I mean, there's just, humans aren't wired to trust voices on the phone. There are definitely times when you need in-person contact, but you need surprisingly little of it. When we start a new engagement, especially, you know, a big important engagement, we really try and get some people on site. And it can be just for a few days. And it's funny things to sort of acknowledge the communication that happens. You understand people's body language. You understand their sense of humor. You understand their, like, the company politics a little bit, you know, this sort of, and it allows you to be a little bit more delicate and understanding when you're continuing to have communication with them on the phone or even through email. You know, someone with a really dry sense of humor, you can totally misunderstand that over the phone, but it could take you 2 minutes of talking to them in person before you're like, oh, I get it. And then now you're totally up to speed with them. And so we really try to, you know, launch new client engagements with on-site time, which means that the Lullabot team does a fair amount of traveling.
It's true, we do. One of the most exciting developments for me in 2012 was that I did enough traveling that I finally got, I got like premier status on an airline.
Nice.
It feels like...
Ian, I thought you had your own airline at this point.
Nate, you had at one point, they were like putting you in first class and they had a little like tiara for you and stuff when you sat down, right?
Foot massage.
If the flight was slow, they would let you come up and fly.
Yeah. Like, hey, sir, why don't you just hop up here?
Hop up. Why don't you sit up in the co-pilot's chair? If only it were like the 1960s again. Yeah. But, you know, and conversely, we have done a fair amount of also sort of like embedded work, on-site kind of stuff. Notably, Nate and Addie, you both were involved. We did a summer in New York City where we rented an apartment and worked at Sony Music. It was the two of you and Angie, right? Were mm-hmm. rented an apartment and every day went over to the Sony offices. And it was an interesting sort of situation because you did that, I feel like, for like 2 or 3 weeks and then realized like it felt incredibly unproductive to have to get on the bus and take the subway and then go
commute over there, and then people would keep coming by and bothering you.
Gonna find lunch and all that kind of stuff. And so after a few weeks, you just started working at the apartment that we rented.
Well, yeah, we mostly couldn't, but especially at the end when we had like, we were trying to plow through a lot of work in a short amount of time, we were like, oh, screw it. We're just going to stay home and work. we need to get this done.
Yeah,
but staying home in New York, like in the rented apartment, rather than spending the hour to get to the office and back, which was even more funny because it's like, well, we could have just done this across the country, you know, the company of our own homes.
We found it to be a lot more productive to work out of this rented apartment, which was a mile away, than to go into the office. So, yeah.
But that did give you access to New York's excellent network of really good food delivery.
Yes.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, it did.
Yeah, and so I mean, it's continues to be an interesting time at Lullabot. I wrote up a sort of an article on Lullabot.com, sort of a 2011 retrospective, but that also kind of looks into the future of where we're going as a company. And it's interesting. I mean, I feel like Drupal has really grown up. The DrupalCon, for instance, does not feel like this sort of cobbled together event anymore. It's, there are, you know, it's a big, serious event, that happens in like a real convention center and that kind of stuff. And, Drupal is, I don't know if it's quite a household name, but for web developers, you know, it's something that they've heard of. It's seen as a respectable kind of thing that's out there. And I don't know, it feels, on the one hand, triumphant, but on the other hand, feels a little bit, I don't know, there's sort of this, there was this sort of underdog quality. I mean, maybe it's just sort of the early adopter part of me, you know, it's like, oh yeah, you know, Drupal, I don't need to convince anybody of anything anymore. They kind of understand it, you know? You know, and so we've gotten a little bit less diligent about doing this podcast, for example. I think it's been a couple of months since it sort of ebbs and flows. And I always get a little embarrassed when it's not happening, but I don't feel like it's as like needed as it used to be. If that makes sense to anybody.
There are a lot more resources out there just for discovering and keeping track of what's going on in the Drupal world. It's been interesting because, like, you know, between like the work that we did with the Using Drupal book and, you know, some of the very, very early training and, you know, the podcast, it's very interesting how, there's a lot of stuff out there that that satisfies a lot of those needs that I think Lullabot really got into just because, you know, it felt like, well, somebody's got to be doing this. And, you know, we're out here, you know, working with our clients and stuff like that. And this information has to be out there somewhere, or we're just going to keep saying it over and over and over every time we talk to somebody. And it's been really cool to see that aspect of the Drupal community really mature over time.
Yeah, I mean, as an example, if you do a search on Amazon.com for Drupal and then just narrow it down to just books, there are 277 results.
Wow.
277 Drupal books.
Wow, that's awesome.
That are listed on Amazon.com. I'm proud to say that the Lullabot, the Lullabook, which is called Using Drupal, by O'Reilly, is the second result. That's exciting. Woo. And, is Pro Drupal Development on here, even on the list anymore? There it is. It's number 10. But the book that Matt and John Van Dyke wrote the first edition of years ago is also on there too. But there's just a lot of resources. There's a lot of options out there. And it's great to see Drupal doing so well. And it also just sort of feels like it kind of frees us up to start, I don't know, continue growing and sort of stop defining ourselves by Drupal so much. I think for a number of years, you know, we saw ourselves as a Drupal company. We were pushing Drupal forward. And these days, I mean, we're still doing just as much Drupal, probably more Drupal, but we're also becoming a larger company and sort of expanding out and doing other things. We're starting to do mobile development and design work and UX, UI kinds of stuff. And, you know, we've been involved in a really wide variety of projects. And I think what makes us unique these days isn't specifically our Drupal knowledge. But, you know, we do really good project management, for example, and stuff like that. And so it's an interesting, although admittedly a little bit difficult sort of transition to make. I don't know if I could even really call it a transition. It's just sort of like, you know, where at one point Drupal was 100% of Lullabot, I feel like Drupal right now is probably 75% of Lullabot, 80% of Lullabot,
3% lolcats.
Yeah, you know, and you know, we're growing, and I think that it will be probably more like 60% of Lullabot when all is said and done. You know, but it's funny because some of the things are like, I feel like we're doing a lot more of something like Drupalize Me, which feels like an internal project to us. It's just sort of like, oh yeah, we just do that, and it's fun, and it's not like a client Drupal project where we're you know, doing, explaining Drupal to a client or convincing them of Drupal or sort of pushing Drupal forward in that way. But I guess it doesn't get any more Drupalize Me than Drupalize than Drupalize Me. There's our slogan.
Say that five times fast.
Are you Drupalize-y? Drupalize Me.
I think one of the interesting things for me is that, like, one of the first major projects, like when I came on board with Lullabot, was I was, you know, working with Robert Douglas on the MPV project when they needed to get performance up. You know, this was before the site launched, and one of the big, you know, sort of cutting, bleeding edge things that was being experimented with was using this tool called Memcache. That, you know, it's just like this crazy idea. It's like, oh my gosh, you could like replace Drupal's cache tables with that. What a crazy idea. And that was like, you know, 2006. And, you know, now it's like, you know, Memcache and, you know, and Varnish and other kinds of external tools that aren't necessarily inherently Drupal are starting to become a natural part of the sort of Drupal ecosystem. The idea that, you know, oh, well, of course you would use, you know, all of these different additional tools outside of Drupal in order to, you know, make a site perform well or whatever. And then also just the expertise that started to build up in the Drupal community about doing things like, you know, DevOps and, you know, server management and scaling up larger PHP sites and stuff like that. I think to some extent, it's a really natural outgrowth of Drupal's maturing process that a lot of the hardcore Drupal folks have also become experts in other stuff too. And that a lot of the things that they're working on are, they're related to Drupal and they intersect with Drupal, but, you know, it could be working on an open source project to do, you know, deployment management or something like that that isn't in Drupal but overlaps with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I mean, I've said, and people who listen to this podcast have heard me say several times that there's more to Drupal than Drupal. That, it, you know, if you want to build a successful Drupal website, you also need to know how to build a website, you know, general stuff that people who build websites need to know. And so simply being experts in Drupal will not get you 100% of the way there. You know, especially if what you're selling to the client is, I can help you with your Drupal, then you can make a business in that. But if you're helping them to, you know, holistically build a website, you need to know more than that. So,
and there's also the whole miracle on 34th Street quality to it. No, wait. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I was referring to the right
Santa Claus,
arsenic and old lace
house.
That's not right. But just the idea that, like, there's a certain confidence and, you know, a trustworthiness that I think comes when the people who are experts in a certain project are willing to say, are willing to have a conversation about, well, let's figure out if this is actually what's right for you, or, you know, let's figure out, you know, what makes sense. And it doesn't feel like, you know, they're just always giving a hard sell on a particular technology or whatever. I think there's a level of comfort that comes with that, and we've seen that with a lot of clients who are actually much more comfortable using Drupal because they know that it's not just, you know, another vendor coming in with, and dropping their stack in.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, sort of the trust in objectivity, or it's probably not objectivity so much as, just if you're too close to it, you end up seeming like a zealot. it's like, oh yeah, they always just talk about that. If you want to hear that, then go talk to them.
Yeah, the amount of whining that we do, there's no way we'd be considered zealots.
Well, I guess, you know, I mean, we've always thought that Drupal is an open source project, that a healthy dose of criticism will help. And again, on the podcast, you know, we poke fun and, when's it going to come out? Ha, ha, ha. Oh, is this one going to be usable? Ha, 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 ha.
We laugh because we love.
Will we be able to understand the menu system this time? Ha, 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 ha. You know, I don't know. It goes back and forth. I think that there is a certain amount of religiosity in the Drupal community. How dare you criticize Drupal? I got this software for free and I built a website with it, you know. It's like, yeah, but it's crashing for us.
Yeah. That sounds like you're not contributing enough, Jeff.
See, there you go. You're just not donating enough money to the church. I don't know. But yeah. So anyway, so what's happening with Lullabot these days? Last year we launched MarthaStewart.com. We launched WWE.com.
We've got the Grammys coming up. Third year running now.
Third year running with the Grammys. Watch the Grammys telecast, and when they say, for more information, go to Grammy.com, and you go to Grammy.com. Do it! Go there! And that site will stay up. We've been nervous about it in the past, but this year I'm pretty confident it'll stay up.
it's one of those things. You only should worry when you stop getting nervous.
Exactly. That's it's
yeah. Like, when you're confident that everything's cool, then you probably missed something.
Yeah. But oh man, boy, it gets pounded. I always thought that when the commercial comes up, people go to the bathroom, but apparently they actually go to the website like they tell them.
Or maybe they do both.
Oh, the iPhone. What you're talking about is the iPhone.
Responsive design this year. It's just saying.
It's an iPod. It's a web browser. It's a telephone. Use it in the bathroom. I think that was Steve Jobs' presentation when they announced the iPhone. yep. Well, and what else? Whole bunch of stuff.
We're going to have to use the bleep button if we start talking about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're starting to get involved in some projects that we can't talk about, which is difficult. You know, the open source, kind of wanting to be open about the
things.
And
there's nothing nerds love more than talking about the things they're making.
Yeah, usually we don't take a project that we can't talk about unless it's really cool. Which means it's that much more difficult not to talk about it. So, anyways, but
that's our sly way of saying, God, we're crying out loud. I wish we could tell you about the project we're working on. It's killing us. But eventually,
yeah. What else? Lots going on. Like I said, we're hiring. So, lullabot.com/jobs. I don't know. I feel like we should. This has been sort of a self-indulgent podcast. I feel like we should end with some sort of universal truth that can make this sort of useful for everyone, rather than just being self-indulgent and Lullabot for an
hour. We should have a Lullabot deep thought of the day at every on every podcast.
I don't know. I guess, Drupal been very, very good to me. I mean, it's been great. I guess maybe if I needed to make this a little bit more universal, I would say that we launched what I would consider to be a very successful and certainly fulfilling emotionally fulfilling. Like, I feel like, you know, we've really have consistently done as good or better than I could have hoped. And you know, it really all started with Drupal. You know, we really got involved in Drupal and helped to push Drupal forward and help Drupal push us forward, you know, let's be honest about it. And now I feel like as we're sort of looking into the future, you know, we're starting to figure out how we can kind of use that push to go in other directions and what else we could do and other technologies and other, kinds of things that we could do. But, it doesn't feel like moving away from Drupal so much as launching off from Drupal, which I think is, which is a great thing.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's very exciting to think of it like that. You know, what else can we do with it? And to go to clients and know that you've got a solid platform that's been put together for years now, and say, what else can we do to make your work more meaningful? That's really what I love doing, and to go in and to bring not only Drupal, but to bring the community into that. I mean, let's be honest, we've got to hire a lot of our friends in the Drupal community and get people jobs and keep giving back and to sort of accomplish that as a team, not just Team Lullabot, but Team Drupal community has been really rewarding for me too. You know, what we can do together more than by ourselves, and to spread that message and to get other people excited about it and just to keep that momentum going has been awesome to be able to do that for 7 years, and I want to do it for seven more years.
Yep. And we'll be going to DrupalCon. Everybody on this podcast will be there, and a whole bunch of other Lullabot people. Lullabot is sponsoring. We got a big booth, hopefully right in the middle there. And Drupalize Me is also sponsoring. So there'll be a Drupalize Me booth and a Lullabot booth. And come on by and say hello. We'd love to talk to you. Yeah. There you go. That sounds like a podcast. Anybody have anything else to add?
I don't know.
Detailer ikke dansk.
Are you speaking Denmark?
No, I'm speaking Denmark. I'm Copenhagen. Speaking it with a horrible, horrible American accent, and I'm saying I don't speak Danish. And so when I say it the way that I speak it, people totally believe me because it's really, really poor.
Right on. Well, there you go. On those sage words.
That's a universal truth.
We will end podcast 100. And as usual, if you have thoughts, suggestions, or ideas for future podcasts, come to lullabot.com. Our contact form, I think, has a pull-down thing for podcast feedback, and we would love to hear from you. Thanks, everybody.
Woo-hoo.
Bye. Bye. Thanks. Bye.